Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. This share comes to you from London, where amazingly my wife and I managed to arrive here last week. Baruch Hashem, we have a bar mitzvah of a grandson who we haven't seen for a year and a half. So we decided to make the effort. And despite all the efforts of the Israeli government and the British government to make this into a real obstacle course of tests and documents and declarations and all sorts of things, here we are. Whether we'll manage to get back or not, that will be the second stage of the challenge. But I'm told because we're double vaccinated and Israeli citizens, we should be able to get back in again without too much of a problem, and we'll deal with that after Pesach. So I'm going to give a shiur today. I think we'll take a break afterwards for Pesach, and then we'll resume Bez Hashem after Pesach. So I was thinking today, having done quite a couple of months of Rav Shamshon Raphael Hirsch and his innovations and his Kehillah and his writings and his Divrei Torah, I wanted to do something relevant to Shamshon Raphael Hirsch, not him personally, but the era in which he lived and the challenges that he was confronting, and also something to do with Pesach, which could be of interest, a general interest, as we are approaching Pesach. So here's the topic I've chosen, which I hope you'll be interested in. I think it's a magnificent, this story that I'm going to be speaking about for the course of today's shiur is a magnificent story. It combines history and halacha and science and general hashkafic attitudes, which are still very relevant and with us still today. In general, in these shiurim, my intention is not just to study history, but to study those aspects of history which still have an impact on our Jewish life in our generation. So here's the question, ladies and gentlemen, what sort of matzahs do you eat on Pesach? Are they round or are they square? That's my question. Are you eating round matzahs or are you eating square matzahs? Now, in case you think this is a trivial question, by the end of this shiur, you will realize this is by no means a trivial question. This is in the 19th century, this was a nuclear question. This was a question that really ripped through Europe and all the countries in which your grandparents and great-grandparents lived were really torn apart by this question, round matzahs or square matzahs? Of course, I'm purposely trivializing it a little bit by using the shapes of the matzahs. But of course, the shape of the matzah in this particular case is not just a shape. It is a radically different matzah production process, totally and radically different. So let me just explain to you a little bit what I mean, and that is that from Moshe Rabbeinu until about 1840, the whole of Klal Yisrael only ate matzahs that were handmade. There was no such thing as anything other than handmade, hand-baked, hand-kneaded and rolled matzahs. All matzahs were hand matzahs. And simply because of the ease of production, hand matzahs have always been and continue to be round. And the reason why they're round is because that's the way when you roll the dough, the easiest thing to do with the dough is to roll, is once you've kneaded the dough, everything has to be done at the highest speed possible. Once you've kneaded the dough, you roll the dough into like a long sausage, with a diameter of 2 or 3 inches or 3 or 4 inches. And then you cut it up into pennies, into little penny size slices. And then everybody around the table gets a penny of dough and starts feverishly with a rolling pin, rolling out that penny into a flat circle of dough. And then that is taken at top speed into the oven, and out comes a handmade matzah. Now, everybody, I think, has heard of the 18-minute rule. But the truth is, the 18-minute rule, which is, of course, mentioned in Shulchan Aruch, mentioned in the Rambam, is easy to say, the 18-minute rule, but how do you measure the 18-minute rule? From when to when is 18 minutes is actually not such a simple question. Now, I'm going to make sort of general statements during this year, but of course, I'm overgeneralizing enormously. Different matzah productions employ different principles and different mechanisms. So it's by no means my intention to describe the way that everybody in general in life, there is no one size fits all in terms, certainly not in terms of Jewish life and in production. Let me explain to you the issue. The issue was, so we're going back to the generation of Rav Shamshon Raphael Hirsch, right? So this shiur is about, is to give you a little bit of context of the shiurim that I've been giving recently about his great innovations in Germany in the mid-19th century. Remember, Rav Shamshon Raphael Hirsch only comes to Frankfurt in 1851 to build his community, the Ir Geh, in Frankfurt. What are the sort of things that are going on at the time, and why are they relevant? So let me explain to you. So in about 1840, somebody had the bright idea of making a machine that can make matzahs. Now, a machine to make matzahs has to be, don't forget this is before electricity, it's mechanized to first knead the dough and then roll the dough and then bake the dough. Now, this is actually not such a complicated process, but it needs a lot of attention to detail. And because of the way the production runs, it doesn't run the way I just described before, that it's rolled into a long sausage and cut into pennies. It's actually made into sheets, and the sheets are cut into squares. So from the very beginning, machine matzahs are square and hand matzahs are round. And this has become now a symbol of two different ways to fulfill the mitzvah of matzah, the square matzahs and the round matzahs. But let me give you a little bit of the idea of the controversy that started unraveling in the about 1830s, 1840s on this subject. So the real, if you like, bombshell controversy started off in Galicia. Galicia is more well known to us in modern geography as the Ukraine, even though Galicia was a bigger country than the Ukraine, included parts of Poland. Even Krakow was in Galicia, later on became part of Poland. But in eastern Galicia, or closer to the Russian side of the Ukraine, there were two major Jewish centers, two major, massive, hundreds of thousands, if not more than that, of Jews. One was a town called Lemberg, sometimes referred to as Lvov. It was the city of Lemberg. And then there was the city of Brody. Brody and Lemberg were the two main focus points of commercial life, massive commercial life. And according to some reports, Brody was like 75% Jewish, the whole city. I mean, the amount of Jewish population in these cities was massive, mainly because there were massive economic opportunities there, and the Jews flocked to these cities in order to make use of the economic possibilities. But in these two towns, because of the number of Jews, also attracted the senior rabbinic and halachic authorities of that age. So of course there are many of them, but I'm just going to single out a few of them. And in Brody, one of the most prominent authorities was someone called Rav Shlomo Kluger. So Rav Shlomo Kluger is really a little bit the generation before Shamshon Raphael Hirsch, but there's an overlap between them. And in the period that we're talking about, 1840, was a period where both of them were very active, very productive, and both of Shamshon Raphael Hirsch and Rav Shlomo Kluger were prolific writers. Except that they were both operating in such completely different social environments as to be almost on different planets, right? The planet of Frankfurt am Main and the planet of Brody were like unbelievably, almost unrecognizably different from each other. Shlomo Kluger was the poisek of Brody. He was a magid, a rov, and a prolific writer of unbelievable proportions. there are about 150 svarim, which he produced. 150 svarim produced by him, including some of the most incredible, his Shilas and Tshuvas called Ha'elef L'Choshleima, genius Tshuvas, his commentary on the Shulchan Aruch called Chochmas Shleima, also an absolutely massive classic style. And he was very much, even though he was very much connected to the world, don't forget Galicia was the cradle of the Hasidic world. Mezhibov and Ger and Lizhensk and all these places were in Galicia, and the Hasidic world grew and developed in the beginning of the 19th century. That was the growth period of Hasidism. And Hasidic communities, and a Hasidic perspective on life. And in order to understand Rav Shimshon Raphael Hirsch properly, you have to understand his position was very, I've been emphasizing in my shiurim, how he was combating the left, if you like. He was combating the reform, the assimilation, the conservative movement, all those Jews who were rushing out of halachic Judaism into the arms of modernity. The opportunities that modernity offered, the opportunities of going to university, intellectual opportunities, going into politics, going into commerce, buying properties, all the things Jews were never able to do in the Middle Ages in Europe, suddenly they could do. And that really sparked off the most massive assimilation, and not only assimilation, but even conversion to Christianity in order to grasp all the opportunities that the modern Europe presented in the mid-1800s, right? However, there was also the majority, or if you like, or certainly the majority of Jewish life was actually not on the left, the Rav Shimshon Raphael Hirsch, but was on his right, was Eastern Europe, was mainly the Hasidic world, which was massive. And they lived in the Ukraine and in Poland, in the Eastern Europe. And they were actually, their response to modernity was a different one completely, was a diametrically opposite one. Their response to modernity was to shut down. Their response to modernity was, in order to be saved from the temptations of modernity, here's the story. Don't speak their language. Don't wear their clothes. Don't attend their colleges. Don't sit in their coffee shops. Don't read their books. Let's create a hermetically sealed world, which is chometz free, to use the phrase that maybe we're more familiar with at this time of year. Chometz free, modernity free. We don't have the slightest anything to do with modernity. Now, one of the interesting things, and of course, modernity did offer all these incentives to leave Judaism, which I just mentioned, but also, unfortunately, one might say, modernity happened in the 19th century at the same time as the Industrial Revolution. So suddenly, you didn't go by horse, you went by train. There weren't motor cars yet, there wasn't electricity yet, but there was a train, and the train was a big chiddush, something completely new. Right in the 19th century. I mean, it had been a little bit earlier, but suddenly became the normal way to travel. There were all sorts of new shilas came up. You know, were you allowed to go by train if the train journey lasted for a few days and that covered Shabbos? Could you stay on the train even though it went out of the tchum, and were you carrying new shilas which had never ever been asked before came up. And one of the impact of the Industrial Revolution was machinery for making cloth, machinery powering all sorts of different types of production lines. And here you had a matzah machine. So I want you to understand that this matzah machine was also an opportunity to produce matzahs on a commercial level much cheaper than the hand machine, and to produce many more of them, right? But it was also accepting the new innovations of the time. Came along Rav Shlomo Kluger, And he wrote a pamphlet called Moda'a Yisrael, in which he completely blasted and completely invalidated and completely criticized any possible attempt to make machine matters. Machine matters, as far as he was concerned, were, and here, of course, is the worst word any rabbi can use this time of year. Machine matzahs were chametz. That's what they were. They were chametz, right? In other words, he brought a whole list of seemingly halachic reasons about why machine matzahs weren't good. I'll give you an example, or one or two of them. First of all, machine matzah, the machine has got lots of moving parts and lots of wheels and everything, and very difficult to clean. And in order to clean it between each baking session is very hard. And therefore there'll be fragments of dough stuck between the wheels. And next time you do the next batch, it's gonna have chametz in it, right? So the mechanics of, I don't know if any of you have actually visited a matzah baking factory. I recommend it. It's an interesting experience, the matzah baking factory, how it takes place like in massive bursts of frenetic energy in order to get this batch of dough out and baked and in time. And then there's a whistle and everything stops. And then for the next half an hour, just cleaning. Everything is being cleaned and it's being scrubbed. And of course, nowadays they've got high pressure air, which of course is fantastic. High pressure air goes in between all the wheels and on all the rollers and all the conveyor belts and everything. It's cleaned and cleaned and cleaned. They spent as much time cleaning as they spend baking. Because each time you have a consignment of dough, you have to knead it and then roll it and then cut it and then get it into the oven, and you can keep going for 18 minutes. And then that's it. It's finished, because that dirt, that flour and water have been together for 18 minutes, and we need to clean up. So there's frantic energy of baking, followed by frantic energy of cleaning, and that's the system. Came Rebbe Kluger certainly in the 1840s and said that's not possible. I think he published in 1857, and he had the backing. Listen to this. He had the backing at the time, one of the biggest Hasidic dynasties, if you like, courts in Europe, was the Gera Hasidim. And the Gera Hasidim were Polish Jews. And the head of the Gera Hasidim at the time was Rabbi Itcher Meir, generally known as the Chidushe Harim. And the Chidushe Harim was the grandfather of Tzfas Emes. So he was the Hasidic leader of great repute. And he joined Rabbi Shlomo Kluger in his absolute devastating denunciation of machine matters. The third person who joined Rav Shlomo Kluger was no less influential, was somebody called the Rav Chaim of Tzantz, the Divrei Chaim. Right, he's known as the Divrei Chaim. He was the Rebbe of Tzantz, and he also wrote the Divrei Chaim that machine matzahs are chametz. So here you have three massive, respectable Orthodox rabbis in Eastern Europe who are denouncing machine matzahs because you can't bake them in time, you can't do them in time. Incidentally, there were also certain economic issues which they mentioned. And that is that there's a whole set, don't forget, imagine to yourself we didn't have any machine matzahs and we only had hand-baked matzahs. I want you to imagine such a world today. Right? How many people would we need to employ to make all the hand-baked matzahs for the whole of Klal Yisrael? Right? We'd have like tens of thousands of people would have to be working on hand matzahs to supply matzahs for the whole of Klal Yisrael, for the whole of Pesach. And indeed, when you think about it, as I say, from the time of Moshe Rabbeinu until the 1840s, that's how it was. There were large sectors of the community who depended for their parnasa on the hand baking matzah industry. And in actual fact, one of the claims against machine matzahs was you're depriving this whole sector of the community of their livelihood, right? So you have a whole sector of poor. Don't forget, I just want to put in as a footnote here, the poverty in the Ukraine is beyond belief. talking about extremely poverty-stricken Shtetlach, and even in the cities where there was more opportunities to make money, we're talking about extremely low income. The vast majority of Klal Yisrael, very, very low income, beyond anything that we could ever imagine. And they suffer greatly from famines and from plagues and from persecutions and from all sorts of difficulties, right? But hand-baking matzahs was a serious source of income. Everybody needed matzahs. Everybody needed matzahs. And hand-baking matzahs was a source of income which even the simplest Jew could do the manual labor of kneading the dough and baking it. And that's so one of the reasons, that was the second reason. The first reason was it was difficult to clean the machine. Second reason is you're depriving these people of their livelihood. And the third reason is even more interesting halachically, but that only relates to, again, I'm not sure everybody's aware of this, but the matzah that you eat to fulfill the mitzvah on Seder night of Achilas Matzah, that matzah has to be baked l'shem mitzvahs matzah. If you ever go to a hand-baking factory, right, you'll see people frantically rolling the dough and then baking it and everything, and there's a lot of mumbling going on, a lot of mumbling. And if you get a bit closer, you'll hear that everybody there is saying all the time, l'shem mitzvahs matzah. L'shem mitzvahs matzah. He's rolling the dough. L'shem mitzvahs matzah. He's kneading it. L'shem mitzvahs matzah. He's putting it in the oven. L'shem mitzvahs matzah means that this is not ordinary matzah. This is shmura matzah. And shmura matzah means that it's been baked with the kavana to be used l'shem mitzvah. Now, this is not unusual. You know, there are quite a few mitzvahs that we need an item. For example, a sefer stam who writes Sifrei Torah, mezuzahs, and tefillin, he has to make it l'shem mitzvah. Even the blackening of the boxes of the tefillin, the batim, has to be done l'shem mitzvah. In other words, it's not just the dimensions of the object which are important and the ingredients of the matzah which is important. It's the kavana. It's the intention, right? The human intention which has been invested in this particular object, that is crucial, right? Now, this isn't required in all fields. So, for example, I don't know, if you have your arba minim, you don't need someone to go into the and to cut the lulav and to cut the esrog l'shem mitzvah. But in the manufacture of matzah, but I specify again, only the matzah which is eaten at the beginning of the Seder night and at the end of the Seder night. The matzah for the first kezias and the matzah that you eat for afikoman, that has to be made l'shem mitzvahs matzah. So one of the claims against machine matzah was as follows. I want you to contrast two situations. One situation I've just described, where all the workers in the hand matzah factory are constantly saying l'shem mitzvahs matzah, compared to the machine matzah situation, where the water hits the dough, and there's a yid who stands there, and he says l'shem mitzvahs matzah, and he presses the button. That's all he does. He presses the button, and once he's pressed the button, that's it. Everything else happens automatically. Right? Is that l'shem mitzvah? Is that sufficiently l'shem mitzvah or not? Right? But I want you to recognize for a second that this is a different question to the question of the kashrus of machine matzahs. There's quite one question of whether they are kosher matzahs to be eaten the whole 7-8 days of Pesach. There's another question is, are they kosher to be eaten for the first and last kezias on Seder night? And if we fast forward to the end of the story for a minute, there are many people, myself included, who will eat machine matzahs on Pesach and even on Seder night. But for the first kezias and the last kezias, I will only eat handmade matzahs. Because I do believe there is some sort of an issue in the question of kavana, l'shem mitzvah, to do it for the purpose of the mitzvah. Does the machine have the ability to invest the matzah with that kavana? That is, I consider to be a genuine question, right? All the other issues we'll deal with in a minute. But that question still remains ad hayom hazeh. And therefore, on our Seder night table for my whole life, I've always had square matzahs for when you're hungry during the meal, you want to eat matzahs, and round matzahs for the first kazayas and the last kazayas, because they are made l'shem mitzvah matzah. It is a little bit of a chumrah, but that is not an unusual practice for people to buy sort of 90% of their matzahs for Pesach are machine made, but there is a little bit of handmade just for Seder night, just to fulfill the mitzvah in its optimum way. What happens is that once this blast, this pamphlet is written by Reb Shlomo Kluger, the Chidushei Harim and the Divrei Chaim, that becomes a statement, if you like, of belief in the Hasidic world, in the Ukrainian world, in the East European world. But however, within a year, a counter pamphlet was put out. So this was a battle of the greatest halachic minds of the era. So I've mentioned to you before that one of the teachers of Rosh Hashanah Nefol Hirsch was the Rav in Altona, which was part of Hamburg. And he was called Rabbi Yaakov Ettlinger. Rabbi Yaakov Ettlinger, generally known in the Talmudic world as the Aruch Lenea. The Aruch Lenea was one of the primary halachic authorities in the more Western Europe world. And he wrote a paper together with, interestingly, so I mentioned to you at the beginning of the Shia that in the Ukraine there were two centers. There was Brody and Lemberg. So Brody was of Shlomo Kluger, who was seriously committed to fight the battle against machine matzahs. But in Lemberg, you had also a posek of the generation who was called Rabbi Yosef Shaul Natanzon. Yosef Shaul Natanzon, who wrote also a prolific writer and a major halachic opinion, and he wrote a tshuvas called the Shoyel Umeshiv. And the response to Shoyel Umeshiv are still today, right, in the library of every practicing rabbi as one of the classic reference sources on contemporary questions. He wrote in favor of machine matzahs. He felt, on the contrary, machine matzahs are easier to control. They are easier to clean. They're easier to monitor. And in actual fact, it's true you're depriving lots of poor people of their parnasa, but on the other hand, you can produce matzahs at a fraction of the price of hand matzahs. And then you go to the shops today, ladies, you go shopping today and compare the hand matzah prices to the machine matzah prices, right? The machine matzah prices are maybe less than a quarter, sometimes even a tenth of the price of hand-baked matzahs, a kilo for kilo. So that's what he claimed. He said, you can't give me an economic reason against hand-baked matzahs because it makes matzahs cheaper and more available. Right? You can't tell me that it's more difficult to clean. He says, because I've seen some of these hand-baked matzahs, and who's working there? Don't forget, the people working in these hand-baked matzahs are not the big Talmidei Chachomim and the Machmirim. They are the unemployed people in the shtetl who are often don't quite know what they're doing, and when they take a break, they have a sandwich, and they've still got some crumbs in their beard, and then they come and roll the matzahs. They don't really know what they're doing, right? And they're much more difficult to monitor, right? Both the sanitary and the halachic precision. Don't forget, Pesach needs meticulous attention to detail. So he claimed that quite the contrary, the machine matzahs are a blessing, and we should go for machine matzahs. And indeed today, and in actual fact, in Rosh Hashanah Nefol Hirsch's world, there was the view that we are machmir on this subject and we only have machine matzahs. That was considered to be a chumrah, to only have machine matzahs, because we don't want to rely, who knows what's happening in the hand-baked matzah production business. Who knows who's doing it? They're using yeshiva bachrim, they're using unemployed people who maybe don't know exactly what they're doing. And they might be, how can we monitor them exactly? With a machine, we can tell, we know this is industrialized, this is monitored, this is supervised. We are only having machine matters. So Rabbi Yaakov Ettlinger came out in favor. And interestingly, the Rav of Pressburg. So Pressburg, some of you might be aware of the fact that Pressburg was the city of the Chasam Sefer, but this is already after the Chasam Sofer, is his son, who is known as the Ksav Sofer. I think his name was Avram Shmuel Sofer. He was the Posek in Pressburg. Now, Pressburg was a very influential place, being the center of Hungarian, what they call the Oberlanders. The Oberlander Hungarians were very, actually, they weren't Hasidish at all. They got very offended if you called them Hasidim. They were very Haredi, but not at all Hasidim. They were very cultured and very well-read and very civilized. And they were very much into the Western world, but at the same time, very meticulous in their halachic observance, every single detail and everything. So the Ksav Sofer came out and he joined in Rav Ettlinger in writing a pamphlet defending, not only defending, but actually recommending machine matzahs as that's the best way to go. That is the best way to go. So all the technical and economic reasons were flying on both sides. But I must say today, for example, some of you might have heard maybe of the Kloisenberger Rebbe, Zichrono Livracha, who was a truly remarkable tzaddik and a remarkable leader. And so Kloisenberger's sons, in fact, when the Kloisenberger Rebbe came to Israel, he established the Kiryat Sons in Netanya. Right? Some of you might have been to Kiryat Sons in Netanya. And that was established by the Kloisenberger Rebbe. Right? So he considered himself a disciple of the Tzanz Rebbe's, right? And he was not, generally speaking, wasn't such a big machmir, but on machine matzahs, he was fire against machine matzahs. And he told his chassidim and anybody who asked him that eating machine matzahs is chametz. Chametz. It's also to eat machine matzahs. Right, and so this to this day, you will find in the Hasidic world people like the Kloisenberger Rebbe and Gera Rebbe, these people for whom machine matzahs are just goyish. What can I say? I can't find a better word than that for it. Right, are completely and totally unacceptable. And then there's the other world. So, for example, my Rebbe Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach had machine matzahs. He used to eat machine matzahs on the whole of Pesach. Rav Shlomo Zalman, of course, he was careful to buy only the machine matzahs where he relied on the machinery and everything. But generally speaking, the level of supervision of machine matzahs is much higher because it's more industrialized and more specific, and you can keep an eye on every single moving part in the whole machine. Whereas in the hand-baking matzahs, it's a bit more of what one might call a Yiddish Geschäft. In other words, it's a bit more ad hoc. Who are the people working? When do they come in? When they start rolling? Who are they doing? It's more of a cottage industry, what they used to call it in England, a home-baked industry. But here comes an interesting thing, which I'd like to superimpose on the top. So this whole debate was actually a halachic economic debate between the Gedolei Yisrael and Eastern Europe, right? Shlomo Kluger and his associates, right? Including the Divrei Chaim and the Chiddushei Harim. These were the Hasidic leaders of the time, against Rabbi Yaakov Ettlinger and the Shaul of Meshiv and the Ksav Sofer on the other side. So this was really, I must be honest with you, in the 19th century, this was the battle of the titans. This was the battle of the giants in the halachic world. But let me explain to you, maybe let's zoom out for a minute and explain this whole controversy, the big picture of this controversy. The big picture was as follows. Do we, Orthodox Judaism, do we want to embrace modernity in our halachic lives? Are we interested in taking on, don't forget the shape of the matzah, was one of the most visible signs of embracing the advantages of the modern world. In other words, the square matzah was the modern world. This was the world of the Industrial Revolution. And in people's minds, modernity was equivalent to haskalah, was equivalent to assimilation, was equivalent to abandoning Orthodox life, abandoning Torah and mitzvahs, people tended to see this as a package deal. If you embraced modernity, the chances are you were going to university, you're becoming a professional, and before you knew it, you had slipped out of Orthodox life in the 1850s. Whereas for Shlomo Kluger in Brody, and in for the Chidushi Harim in the Gera Hasidim and the Divrei Chaim in Tzanz, the idea of accepting a machine to make our holy matzahs. In other words, the matzahs weren't just things that we ate, they were heiliger matzahs, right? They were part of our avodas Hashem. Do we want machines to intrude into our avodas Hashem? Do we want science and technology to be part of our religious life or not? So this was the big picture issue was, just how afraid are we of modernity? In other words, even those rabbanim, and there were even some rabbanim who came out against machine matzahs, and when they were asked, what is your reasons for being against machine matzahs, they said, I'm not giving you any reasons at all. There are no reasons. I'm just telling you that it is a major mistake in our avodas Hashem to eat matzahs made by a machine. I'm not going to tell you any halakha, I'm not going to quote any rishonim or achronim or any gemaras. It's just a major, what did they mean? They meant, keep away from any signs which resembled, and which in some sense not just resembled, but they were the products of a modern life. The square matzah was a modern life. The round matzah was preserving the ancient traditions of Klal Yisrael. How afraid are we of modernity? And this became really a major issue, which is still with us today. There are battles of this sort, where every innovation is considered to be a seeding ground, giving in ground to a modern world. Every time you build something which is new. I'll give you an interesting example, some of you might be familiar with. In the last 25 years or so, there has been a discovery and a production of tcheles for tzitzis. Some of you might have seen people wearing tzitzis, which has a blue thread in them. Okay, we haven't had a blue thread in tzitzis for at least a couple of thousand years, maybe longer, right? Because we lost the tradition of exactly where the blue dye came from and how to produce the tcheles. However, about 25, 30 years ago, the truth is even a bit longer, Rabbi Yitzchak Isaac Halevi Herzog, who was the first chief rabbi of Israel, he wrote a PhD. He wrote a PhD for the Sorbonne University in France on the ancient purple dye of the Bible. And it was scientific. It included quite a fair amount of marine biology, because it came, the Gemara says, that the blue dye came from some sort of marine creature, whether it was a fish or whether it was a snail or whether it was some sort of sea-going source. To cut a long story short, this is not a shiur about tcheles, but why am I mentioning it here? Because at a certain point, tcheles was, in inverted commas, rediscovered and made available again and industrially produced. You can go today into a Meicher Sfarim round the corner and ask them, can I have tzitzis? And he'll ask you, do you want white tzitzis or tcheles tzitzis? So I wear, both in my talus and in my arba kanfas, I wear tcheles because I believe that tcheles is a major advantage in the mitzvah of tzitzis. And I also believe there's no downside to it. I've had this conversation with lots of different rabbonim. But even if possibly this blue dye is the wrong blue dye, it doesn't invalidate the tzitzis. The tzitzis with tcheles are not less kosher than pure white tzitzis. And there's a chance, in my opinion, something like a 75-80% chance that this is the real, original, biblical tcheles, right? But there's no downside to using it, because even if it isn't, it's just as good as the white tzitzis. It's not a problem. So I've had this conversation, and in the end of the conversation that I've had with Rabbonim, who are very much against the Tchelis, it boils down to something similar to this machine versus handmade matzahs issue. Do we want scientific progress to dictate the way we perform mitzvahs? It's bad enough that we're using mobile phones and driving cars and traveling in jet planes, so we have to use modernity in order to get around and to survive, right? But when we're doing mitzvahs, we're wearing tzitzis, we're eating matzah, let's at least there try and preserve the domain of the ancient way that Klal Yisrael for thousands of years have been performing this mitzvah. And by doing that, we are connecting, if you like, with the early generations. If you wear tcheles, somebody says to me, did your father wear tcheles? I said, of course my father didn't wear tcheles. It wasn't available. Oh, you see, he didn't wear tcheles. So you're doing something that your father didn't do, your teachers didn't do. The answer is it wasn't available for my rebbes and for my father. Had it been available, they might have done it. I don't know. My guess is they would have. But the idea here is the same idea. The rejection of tcheles is similar to the rejection of machine matzahs. Because once you get past all the technical arguments and the economic arguments for matzahs, what you're left with is we're now fulfilling the mitzvah, the heiliger mitzvah of al achilas matzah. We want to connect with Yetzias Mitzrayim. We want to connect with all the generations of Yidden who have eaten matzahs even in the most difficult times, who have baked matzahs even in times of holocausts and inquisitions and pogroms and expulsions and all sorts of things. We've always baked our matzahs. And they've always been round. And they've always been hand-baked. So now you want to use technology to produce this newfangled square matzah thing? What is that? That is offensive. That's offensive to our sense of history. It might not be offensive to our halachic definitions, because halachically, the square matzah is absolutely oiskalt. It's completely accurate. But is that the way you want to perform mitzvahs? Don't you want to perform the mitzvah the same way as your Alter Zeder did? Don't you want to perform mitzvahs the way the Rashi did and the way the Rambam did? Don't you want to do it that way? And that's the same argument with the tcheles. The tcheles is, it's an innovation provided for us by science and technology. Is that how we want to fulfill mitzvahs? Shimshon Raphael Hirsch, his attitude to this question was, yes, we want to perform mitzvahs with all the advantages of all modernity and science and technology and new knowledge. The more knowledge and the more science and the more technology that we've got is all a gift from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu has blessed us with new understanding. We use science and technology for new medicines. Right? No one says, don't take this medicine because your grandfather didn't take it, right? Nobody says, don't have this medical procedure because your Alter Zeder didn't have it. Nobody says that, right? Right? Nobody says, don't have a cataract operation because your Alter Zeder went blind at the age of 60 because he didn't have a cataract operation. You should also go blind at the age of 60 because you don't take a cataract operation. Nobody says that. Now, everybody agrees that in terms of health, in terms of travel and communication, we make full use of modernity. The question is, when it comes to fulfilling a mitzvah, maybe we want to still retain a kesher with the way our ancestors did this mitzvah. So here we are. I return to the first question I started at the beginning of the share. Are your matzahs square or are your matzahs round? Okay, so I want you to understand that this debate really tore a European Jewry in half. And to this day, in a sense, it's probably even true today. I mean, I haven't done any real research on it. It's probably true today that the dividing line between the square and the round matzahs is very much the Hasidic world versus the non-Hasidic world. That's an overgeneralization, of course, but pretty much that's the case. In the Hasidic world, like they have still the tradition, that they wear certain clothes and they speak a certain language and they behave in a certain way, not because the halacha requires it, but because they don't want to diverge their activities from the way their great-grandfather lived. That is a principle of life in the Hasidic world. And it's important to understand that a lot of what the Hasidim do has got nothing to do with the halachic system at all. And it's got nothing to do with the philosophy of Emunah or Yirat Shamayim or Avas Hashem, nothing at all. It's got to do with this one principle. The one principle is my father wore this long black coat and he didn't wear a tie, and therefore I'm not going to wear a tie and I'm going to wear a long black coat, and he wore a big fur hat, I'm going to wear a big fur hat. Why? Kacha! That's how it is. But it's not a stupid idea. Even though I'm a Litvak, right, and I've grown up with Litvish Rabbonim and Litvish and Yekish parents, nevertheless, one can appreciate this idea. Let's not lose touch with earlier generations. Earlier generations dressed in a certain way and lived in a certain way and had certain customs. So our life is different. We've got different phones and different cars and different all sorts of different things. But when it comes to doing a mitzvah, don't we want to do the mitzvah in a way that resembles the way that Klal Yisrael have done this mitzvah for 3,500 years? So in my community, when people asked me about machine matzahs and hand matzahs, I always said to them, Gesundheit, machine matzahs are very good. If you could buy machine matzahs which say on them 18 minutes, then that is even better. Because there are machine matzahs which are 18-minute matzahs. I'm not going to have, this is not a shiur for this purpose, but there's a question about the halachic dimensions of what is acceptable for baking matzahs. And when it says 18 minutes on the box, if it's a reliable hechsher, then it's been baked better than those that are not 18-minute matzahs. Exactly what that means and how it means is a whole different question. Everybody knows, let me just back up for a second as a footnote here. The ingredients of a matzah are the same ingredients as chametz. It's the same ingredients. What's the difference when a matzah is kosher on Pesach or whether matzah is chametz? The answer is, has the dough, in other words, the flour and the water, has it been left to rise, right, before it goes into the oven? Once it goes into the oven, then it's done. But before it goes into the oven, it mustn't be left to rise for more than 18 minutes. That's the Shulchan Aruch. From the moment the dough, the water hits the flour, until the time it goes into the oven, mustn't be more than 18 minutes. That's an 18-minute matzah. However, there is also the view that so long as you're kneading the dough, the fermentation process doesn't start yet. It only starts once you leave it alone. That's what's written in the Rambam, right? That only once you leave it unattended for 18 minutes, then it becomes chametz. So you can either count the 18 minutes from the time the water hits the flour, that's the best way of producing matzahs, or you can count the 18 minutes from the time that the kneading ends, right? So there are lots of different details in the matzah production factory. And again, I've overgeneralized enormously and oversimplified enormously. But I'm just saying, in the production of matzahs, it's kedai to be very, very careful to get the best hechsher and get 18-minute matzahs in your machine matzahs. That's for sure, right? However, I used to advise my members of my kehillah that for Seder night, even if it's just for aesthetic reasons or emotional reasons or historical reasons, have some round matzahs on the table. The round matzahs are the way in which Avos Aviseinu, our ancestors, have baked matzahs for 3,500 years. Let's not forget it, especially on Seder night, which is all about history. It's all about connecting to earlier generations. That's what the Seder night is about. Let's try and at least remember the way in which matzahs traditionally have been baked for the whole of Jewish history until the 1850s. That's how all Jews ate matzahs, in that way. And so for the first kazayas and for the last kazayas, I eat only round shmura matzahs. However, there are people, and I'm not for a minute saying this is not right, who their whole Pesach, they don't touch the round matzahs at all. They have good kosher square matzahs, and they eat shmura matzahs for the first and the last kazayas and say the night. And for the rest of Pesach, they just eat proper kosher matzahs. And that is halachically completely okay. I'm just in this shiur trying to introduce you to an idea which is, in a sense, beyond halach. It's got to do with a sense of continuity of history and the way in which earlier generations sat at their Seder table and enjoyed Pesach. In that sense, the round matzahs create a bit of a different atmosphere. And the kids often are very fascinated. Square matzahs, the kids have seen the whole year round. They know what square matzahs are. Suddenly there's this very weird round matzah. And don't forget, on Seder night, there's a big issue to do things that the kids should be more curious about. Something, manishtana halayla azem, mikar halaylas. Maybe it's a good idea. Maybe I could introduce a fifth manishtana. Manishtana halayla azem, that all year round we eat square matzahs. And tonight we've got round matzahs. That's a new question for the kids to ask. Anything you can do to engage the kids' interest more. And when I say kids, I mean adults as well, of course. We've all got a certain childish interest in new changes and new different things, to do things which are different. We lean a bit to the left in order to be different. We dip in order to be different, to make it different. So round matzahs, I think, should at least be there as a symbol more than as a halachic requirement. But it's an interesting topic. And those of you who are more interested in it, you can Google it. The machine matzah controversy, I'm sure there's all sorts of material on this. It was very fascinating. And you had Gedolei Olam. You had the greatest halachic authorities, the greatest rabbonim of the time, who were battling it out over this subject. And neither of them gave an inch, right? There was the view that machine matzahs actually gave us a new opportunity to use modernity positively, to use it to the benefit of Klal Yisrael, to produce matzahs more economically and faster and with better supervision. And that was a big bracha. Just like modern medicine is a big bracha, modern travel is a bracha, so modern matzah production is also a bracha. But Rav Shlomo Kluger was having none of this. Neither was the Tzanz, Chaim Tzanza, nor the Chidushei Harim, and not a whole range of other Hasidic Rebbes all came out. I think, if I'm not mistaken, Chabad today are very particular not to use any machine matzahs at all. It's all hand matzahs, because the Chabad Rebbes also joined in the general Hasidic attitude. But they must understand there was here a Hashkafic principle. Hashkafic principle is, let's put the brakes a little bit on our enthusiasm for modernity. Where we have to accept modernity with modern medicine and modern travel, okay, we'll drive a car. We won't go by horse. We'll drive a car. Okay, well, we'll use modern medicine. But do we have to use modernity to keep our mitzvahs with? Our mitzvahs are 3,500 years old. Let's try and preserve. And this became a very fascinating. So I'm mentioning this in this shiur because we've been looking at Samson Raphael Hirsch, and this controversy gives you a little bit of a historical context of the world that he was living in the mid 1800s. Don't forget, at the same time as he in Western Europe was establishing his community, which I've explained to you before, was a new model of an Orthodox community, which also absorbed the best elements of modernity, with a professional chazan, a professional rav, with membership, with seating, with ordnung, right? With organized life. Ordnung is unheard of in the shtiebel, right? In the Eastern European shtiebel, the thing that there's absolutely none of is ordnung. And there's no professionalism either. The Baal Kere, the Baal Tfila are sometimes mumbling, sometimes going fast, sometimes going slow. It's all a bit of a Yiddish Geschäft. In the Yekische Schulz in Berlin and in Hamburg, they established the model that we have grown up in, most of us, in the shuls in England and in America and in Israel today, which are well organized, which have got principles, which have ordnung to a certain extent. But he wanted to make sure that you, and this was the brilliance of Shimshon Raphael Hirsch. Shimshon Raphael Hirsch wanted to establish a certain, if you like, selectivity. We select from the modern world those elements which can enhance our life without compromising our halachic observance of Judaism, even one iota. And that was, if you like, the Torah im Derech Eretz principle. Let's embrace the new professions, the new studies, the new opportunities for life without compromising any element or any dot of any halachic practice, right? The Hasidic world went further than that. They said, okay, halacha is halacha, and we agree with you on halacha, but beyond halacha, we want to preserve not only the halachic principles, but also the atmosphere of how you dress and how you speak and how you keep mitzvahs. All that has to be really an uninterrupted continuation of the way our ancestors did it. And the machine matzah, a hand matzah controversy, was a very interesting example of that major cultural debate that was going on among rabbonim and halakhic authorities and Torah leaders of the time. So that's it, ladies and gentlemen. When you sit down to your Seder night this year, I wish you all a Chag Kosher V'Sameach. Enjoy it and enjoy every minute of your Seder, and prepare for your Sedarim not only by cleaning out the house, but also by reading some books and bringing Divrei Torah to the table. And when you see a square or a round matzah at the Seder table, you can tell a story. Tell them a story. Oh, did you know this is a round matzah? Why do we have round matzahs at the table? You know why? Rav Shlomo Kluger and the Tzanzer Rav and the Chiddushei Harim, they dropped a bomb on Jewish life in the mid-1800s, telling everybody that square matzahs are chametz. And then the other Rabbonim, right, Rabbi Yaakov Ettlinger and the Ksav Sefer and other great Rabbonim also all signed on that machine matzahs were in fact preferable to hand matzahs for many reasons. This debate is still with us today, but it is really, I think, a symbolic of the great challenges of the time. And that's what I wanted to share with you today. I wish you all a Chag Kosher V'Sameach. I hope you enjoy your yontif. And unfortunately, I'll be in London for yontif. I wasn't so great, so thrilled about not being in Yerushalayim. But I haven't seen my grandchildren for a year and a half, so I thought it's now or never, and we're here for the time being. But please don't ask Pesach, I'll be back in Yerushalayim, and we will resume. I wish you all the very best. I hope you enjoyed this whole discussion.
Thank you very much. Very interesting. Thank you.
Pleasure. A lot. Rabbi Kimberly, Chag Kosher V'Sameach.